Beasley Media Group, BMI, and HD Radio present 100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers, where we celebrate a century of hits written by some of the greatest songwriters of all time.
Hey, this is Brian Ives. I'm the managing editor of Beasley Media, and I'm hosting a series of interviews with hip-hop's biggest songwriters and producers. We're digging deep, talking about some of their hottest songs. You may not know their names, but you definitely know their hits. This week, we're talking to Derek Milano. He's worked with Megan Thee Stallion, he's worked with Nicki Minaj, he worked with Pop Smoke, rest in peace, and a lot of other great artists. So let's just get into it. Let's talk first about Hot Girl Summer. How'd you get involved with Megan and working on that song?
Yeah, so I actually only had 15 minutes left in the session before I had to leave, and I was just like, yo, let me work on something before I leave. Shout out to Bone Collector. He had played me some beats, and I was like, yo, this beat would sound dope for Drake. So then I was like, let me put a hook idea on it since we only got 15 minutes, and let's see what's up. After I did it, I hit up Juicy J, and I was like, yo, this song that we just did is fire, but it's just missing the element of having, like, real trap drums and that real 3/6 feel to it. So Juicy J added drums to it, and after he did that, he sent it over to Megan. And when he sent it to Megan, unfortunately, Drake was unable to do it, so we got Ty to do the hook, and Ty killed the hook. So after he did it, Megan and everybody was in love with the song. I talked to Celine from 300, and he was like, yo, we really want to move on this record. We're just trying to find, like, somebody that could be on it. So I put up on Nicki Minaj, and I was like, yo, it's this record that we just did that I feel like would be amazing if it would be you and Megan's. I played it for her. She loved the record. And then her and Megan got on live, and then Megan asked her to be on the song, which solidified it. So it really made a, it really made an impact just off the simple fact that it had, you know, I A&R'd it from the beginning to the end.
And so, you know, you mentioned A&R'ing the whole thing, and probably a lot of fans know what that means. But for those who don't, what do you mean when you say I A&R'd it from start to finish?
So, like, when you A&R is when you basically put the whole play together, coming from the producer, the writer, and then getting it to the artist, and then handling all the business, and then bringing everybody else in on the project to get it to come out all the way to a complete process of 100%.
And so are you even negotiating fees and stuff like that? Like how much everyone's getting paid for their part?
Well, no, not really. I let my my A&R handle that part on the business side, just through politically with the publishing.
Right.
But, you know, everybody played their part. Everybody got a fair cut on the record. So it made sense. Nobody made it difficult at the end of the day.
Sure. And, you know, do you need to – I never knew this myself – does everyone need to approve? Like, you know, once they give you a verse or something, do they want to hear the final cut before they sign off on it and it goes out?
Most of the time, depending on certain artists, you know, certain artists trust the person that they're working with, especially if they agreed on the record prior. So I know with that particular record, when Nicki ended up cutting her verse, it was kind of what it was. It was, she, like, Megan didn't really have to call her and be, oh, I think you should do this. It was kind of already a finished product.
And it felt like, you know, once news came out that Nicki was going to be on a Megan remix, people were really looking forward to that. It just felt like, you know, two huge titans of their, you know, that lane of music. Was there a lot of expectations on your, you know, for you, or like, this is better be good. We don't want to let anybody down.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first time really working with Nicki and like her trusting me on something. So, like, I really felt like it had to go a certain way. I didn't want it to come out and then it just everybody's talking about it. Like, that's a song that everybody's going to be singing like for a long period of time, just off of the saying, Hot Girl Summer, and just off of what's going on right now for women empowerment. It was really one of those records that was, that kind of kicked it off, to be honest. In my opinion, I feel like, you know, people look at Nicki, oh, she doesn't do this. Nicki helps everybody. So, you know, her doing that record with Megan was really giving, Megan that light and that, you know, that shine. And I think it was a really good look on both parts.
Sure. You know, it's funny that you mentioned that sort of helped kick off the women's empowerment sort of movement that we're seeing now. I mean, past few days, everybody's talking about WAP, WAP, and, you know, conservative politicians being upset about it and stuff. And it's just like, it's really just women talking about what they want. It's not unusual to hear men talking about what they want sexually in a song. So was Simon Says the song that really sort of put you in the game?
No.
What was your first song that really put you on?
I signed a non-disclosure agreement on it. But it was a really, 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 really big record for a really, really, really big female artist.
Fair enough. I don't want to be a part of violating something. It sounds like there's a lot of lawyers behind that.
I didn't say anything wrong.
Right, exactly.
There's a lot of female artists.
Got it. So, but Simon Says, was that the first time people knew it was you?
No, I actually did Bestie for Bad Baby. That was one of the that was a record that a lot of people kind of tended to just off of the Kodak Black situation, and then Bad Baby just coming off of, you know, her, certain records that she had. And then I did Kevin Gates Me Too, which was big, and it was big for his career, and a lot of people kind of knew about that. Simon Says was one of those ones that kind of just came kind of later. You know, to me, that song wasn't really publicized and really big enough for people to kind of attach that to my name yet. You know what I'm saying? I feel like it was another controversy with that record that had another person's name attached to it, which kind of made them feel like they did the song and they contributed to it. But it wasn't, I kind of left it alone just because of that type of situation. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really tell too many people that, you know, I really had too much to do with that record.
I guess, I mean, you know, feel free to say or not say anything you don't want.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess sometimes when you get involved in a controversy like that, especially early on in your career, that's the thing that people are always going to ask you about.
Yeah, of course. You know, because at the end of the day, you gotta keep your face clean, and you gotta make sure that you handle every situation. You know, you gotta handle every situation professional, and certain stuff that doesn't need to be said doesn't need to be said, and certain stuff that needs to be said needs to be said. So with me saying that is that when I saw what was going on with that situation, I kind of just fell back a little bit, just so it didn't mess up my situation dealing prior with Megan.
Probably a good judgment. Speaking of Megan, so talk about Sada.
Please don't give me hype. Write my name in ice. Can't argue with these lazy basics. I just raise my price. I'm a boss. I'm a leader. I pull up in my two-seater. And my mama was a savage. Look, I got this here from Tina. I'm a savage.
That's one of the songs in the conversation this summer for sure.
Yeah, so the song was already done. Shout out to my brother Jay White. He had produced it. And, you know, I had got a call from Daniel Wright from Roc Nation. And he called me and was like, yo, are you busy right now? And this is literally when quarantine first started. And I was like, nah, what's up? He was like, yo, can you go to the studio and record? And I was like, I mean, all the studios are kind of locked. I said, but I have some studio equipment at the house. I can set it up. I haven't recorded myself in a while, but what do you need? I'll try to do it. So he was like, well, B wants to jump on the Savage remix. And, you know, we're just trying to find verses. And I was just like, well, I'll take some tries at it. You know, I'll figure out, you know, if I can put it together and see if you like it. So, worked on it a few times. He called me back. He was like, yo, we like this. We like this. Can we change this? Can we change that? There's some other writers that's working on it. Can you send me this part? Let's try to do it like this. And, you know, I kind of went blank for a couple weeks. Maybe 3 to 4 weeks or something. I didn't hear anything about the record. I didn't know if it was going to come out. I didn't know the situation. But me and Jay White were always on the phone, and I kept telling Jay White, like, bro, something tells me that this is going to be a big record. So then, I got the phone call from Marielle from, Ivy Park, and she was like, hey, congratulations. You used some of your parts on the Savage remix. So I was like, what? So it really didn't hit me until the song came out, and the song came out literally the next day. So when the song came out and I was just seeing everybody talking about the lyrics and everybody talking about Beyonce jumping on it, it just made it a fire situation. And then once again, that was another record that I was a part of for Megan's career. So it's kind of like, you know, for me, coming into the songwriter world from being like an artist and trying to do both, I feel like you get a lot of credit when you help break artists. And, you know, starting with Megan from the Fever mixtape to that one and then Hot Girl Summer and to the Savage remixes, you know, just kind of put it on a, it kind of put it on a level where it's like one and two together.
I mean, by the time you did that record, you obviously worked with a lot of big stars and had a lot of big success. But the idea that Beyonce is going to be on something you made has got to be a different level of sort of pressure expectations.
Yeah, because I, you know, I like they always, you know, being in LA, it's a whole bunch of producer camps, a whole bunch of writing camps, and people are always trying to shoot ideas and work on stuff with certain artists. So for me to get my first Beyonce placement on a rap record that went number one is like, you know, it's kind of, it kind of means a lot to me. Especially coming in the game and working with, you know, all the top female artists in about a year and a half span.
For sure. Yeah. So how do you write? What is your process of writing?
Really, I just freestyle, to be honest. I never really, like wrote down anything. I kind of just go in the booth and just come and just kind of go, like, what's wrong with my mind? And, you know, I don't really think about it too much. I don't really think about, oh, should I say this word or should I do this word? I kind of just do it. And then if the artist likes it, they like it. Sometimes the artist might like the melody more than the lyrics. Or some artists might like all the lyrics, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of go on with the expectation that I have to like it first. And I'm very hard on myself when it comes to, you know, to putting stuff together just off the fact that my name being attached to certain stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're writing Beyonce's lines for the remix.
Yes.
So how does that work? I mean, because you're writing for Beyonce. It can't be generic. It has to be something that she connects with.
Yeah. You know, they were really on, trying to focus on, captions and really just current event lines that people are saying every day and stuff that could go viral, stuff that could be made in me. So, you know, shout out to everybody. There was a few writers on the record, and everybody put together certain parts that just made it a full, like a full verse.
Yeah.
You know, what? Every line was like, what, how does she know about this? How does she know about that? Wait, what does she know about this? What does she know about that?
What's one of the lines you wrote for her?
I heard they asking for the queen. They brought some cameras in here. And then all this money in the room, he thinks some scammers in here. And, you know, just a few other lines. But, you know, that was one of the lines. People were like, what does Beyonce know about scammers?
But she liked it enough to say it.
Exactly.
Wow. So, I mean, you're actually hearing her reading or rapping your lines. And, I mean, she's not thought of as a rapper, but when she does, she's good.
Yeah, she is good because her tone is amazing. Her delivery is amazing. And she's so polished with music that it's just kind of, you know, it kind of, it flows.
Yeah, and I mean, every once in a while when she gets, like, a little bit more PG-13 or R-rated, it's always surprising to hear, but she's good at that, too.
Exactly.
That's awesome. How did you get involved with working with Justin Bieber? Because I know you did a few songs with him, too.
Yeah, shout out to Pooh Bear, and shout out to Kid Culture. Kid Culture produced Yummy. He had called me one day and was like, yo, I'm at Record Plant, and Pooh Bear wants to meet you. So I pulled up to Record Plant, and me and Pooh Bear were chopping it up. JaVale McGee pulled up, and we were just working on ideas. And, you know, after that session, it was kind of like the Beyonce thing. I didn't hear anything. I was just kind of like, it was a blessing to meet Pooh Bear. Like, I hope we run into each other again to work. Like, I don't know if I wasn't good enough. And then I was in Miami, and he called me, and he was like, yo, happy birthday. And I said, what's up?
He knew, like, it was your birthday?
Nah, that's just his term that he says instead of saying, how you doing, what's up? So he said, happy birthday. And I said, oh, what's up, how you doing? He was like, yo, congratulations. You got a record on Bieber's album available. And I was like, wow. I was like, for real? And he was like, yeah, congratulations. So you got to understand, Brian, like, with me is that first things first, I've always been an artist.
Right.
And coming into the songwriter stuff wasn't something I just woke up and said, oh, I want a songwriter. It's something that I had to literally, like, put my career aside to understand the politics of getting my foot in the door and making my name for, like, what it is and getting in so people can respect me and give me the leverage as an artist and as a businessman, and as an executive and as a creative. So, you know, coming in like how I came in and being able to work with the Nicki Minaj's and the Cardi B's and the Megan Thee Stallion, the Justin Bieber's, the list goes on.
Yeah.
And a year and a half span is just, to me, it's just like amazing. You know what I'm saying? Cause I know a lot of people who've been doing it for a while and you know, sometimes I get a lot of shade and a lot of people who kind of feel some type of way, but it's really my work ethic. Like I'll never let anybody outwork me when it comes to this music side of stuff.
No, I mean, it definitely seems that way. It seems like, you know, like you say, you're an artist first. You know, there are definitely people like Pharrell. He's a good example, I think, who produce huge hits for people across lots of different kind of genres. And, you know, he also gets to make records for himself, but he has his foot in both camps. I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's like sort of your goal, because it's like, if you're writing or working with other people, why not keep doing it?
Exactly. And it builds up my relationships just off of my own artist projects, because I get the co-signs, I get the features, I get the clearances, and then I get the trust to put certain stuff together. You know what I'm saying? First hand and first dibs, instead of like me having to go through their A&R, I can just text them about something. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that definitely makes it a lot easier.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Like whenever you go through managers, A&R people, publicists, whatever, it's like, oh, well, what does it mean? Or is it the right time for them to be doing this sort of collaboration? Whereas if you could just text the guy, it's like, at least you get the real answer. And at least, you know, they know the request is there.
Exactly.
That's cool. So you mentioned Yikes before. Well, you supposed to puck. Uh-oh, get your arrows up. Yikes. I play tag and you it for life. Yikes. You a clown. You do it for likes. Talk about working with Nicki on Yikes.
Yeah, so, you know, Nicki, that's my big sis. And, like, she's been one of the people, like I said, in the industry who's, like, really changed my life and my perspective on just the music business and understanding certain things, the game that she gives me, and, like, the wisdom that she shares with me all the time is just amazing, just because I grew up listening to her. So, you know, with the Yikes record, after coming off of Hot Girl Summer, she was like, yo, we just need to keep working. We were in the studio, and me and her were just going back and forth laying down melodies. And when we were laying down melodies, she would go in the booth, put words on it. She asked me, what you think about this word? I'd be like, that word is cool. What do you think about this one? She's like, that word is cool. And then she'll come with another word, and then we'll be like, oh, yeah, that's it. Let's try that. So, you know, we were able to really, like, put it together, together. And one thing about Nicki is that, and a lot of people always tend to, like, I always get tagged and stuff on Twitter where people be like, oh, Nicki has writers and this, that, and the third. Nicki writes her own music. It's just Nicki likes to get influences off of, like, flows and ideas, and she has no problem collaborating. And that's where people kind of get this situation twisted up with her, because she really can rap.
Yeah.
And, you know, as times change and flows change and certain styles of rap might change, she just likes to be around and in tune on what's going on and what's the new thing. And that's where somebody like me and people who she works with, Pride, Stars, come in and be like, yo, maybe we should try this. And she's so open to working that it's just like she's willing to give it a chance. So, you know, that was a fun record to put together, because it was right after Hot Girl Summer. It was in the midst of, you know, her coming back on the internet. And, you know, it was just fun hearing that Nicki.
Yeah.
Hearing the rap Nicki, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, the other thing, too, like you say, is like, you know, a lot of, I don't want to say older, but when people have been doing it for a while, sometimes they work with ghostwriters, you know, like.
Exactly.
At least she's giving you the credit and saying, hey, this is the guy I work with.
Exactly.
You know, I remember there was a record probably 20 years ago, but Diddy said, don't worry, if I write rhymes, I write checks. And it's like, that's cool too, but if somebody's writing a song with you, you should probably, you know, why not just admit it? Why make it seem like you're writing it? I'm not asking you to diss Diddy, but I'm just saying, like, I just remember thinking, like, yeah, you do write checks, you write big ones, so why not give the guy who, or woman, who helped you write that thing the, you know, you're paying them anyway, but why not give them the credit for everybody else to know about it? So I'll give Nicki credit for being confident enough to just say, hey, you know, I didn't do all this. This guy helped me. That's, you know, I'm paying him. It's cool. That's just my perspective on it. Well, how about this? You know, people know who you are, but, you know, a lot of your songs transcend, you know, there's people who listen to Megan songs that probably have never heard of you. Have you ever been in a situation where, you know, you're at a party, at a club, even at a store, and like a Megan song is being played and you're watching somebody like sort of digging it and you're like, yeah, I wrote that song or I helped write that song?
I mean, I'll be in the club a lot and like, you know, I really go outside. Like I go everywhere, like just to get the culture sound of what's going on.
Right.
And I'm one of those people who'll hear it and just in my mind, like, wow, they don't even know. But sometimes the people that I'm around might bring it up and then I'll just play it off. But I never really was the type of person to kind of like, you know, kind of be in public and then just kind of take away from that artist and be like, oh yeah, I did this and I did that. But if they ask or it comes up, I'll be, oh yeah, I contributed to this record. Like, this is something that I did work on. But yeah, I went out yesterday and it was like they were playing the Beyonce Savage remix and I was just like, if these people only knew.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've heard a few people have told me that they've heard it in an Uber and the driver is driving them and has no idea that like the song that they're listening to and turning up the volume is like written by the guy or the woman and sitting in the back seat at that very moment.
Which
has got to be a fun, you know, it's got to be fun, like, to have that, even if you don't say anything. I mean, they might not even believe you anyway, I guess.
Exactly. That's why sometimes it's better just not even say anything.
Sure. So what would you say, you know, if somebody says to you, okay, I'm not that familiar with you, Derek. What are your signature songs? What are the three songs that I should listen to understand what it is that you do?
I would definitely bring up Hot Girl Summer. I would also bring up, you like kind of like the newer artists. Like a lot of people don't know that I wrote about 11 or 12 songs on Kiana Ledé's album.
Right.
On Kiki. Mm-hmm. And her fan base is like very broad with R&B. And, there's certain records on there that people just love, like Second Chances that's featuring Black that like I just see all day that people post. It's just not on a mainstream level, but on the underground side, that's one record that a lot of people like know just from hearing it on playlists and hearing it on like, you know, music is changing. And then, also, Christopher Walken by Pop Smoke, Rest in Peace.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rest in Peace. That's the first song that me and him worked on together. And that's the song that really got people really saying, we outside, you know what I'm saying? And then us being locked in inside and people wanting to go outside just make the situation, you know, even like a bigger situation. And then, you know, due to his passing, a lot of people were tapped into his music and wanted to learn more about his story and wanted to hear more stuff about him. So that's one of his, that might be one of the last music video that he put out before he passed. And, you know, that's always going to be a song that touches me just off the fact that I saw the star in him and, you know, me and him being able to come up with something that everybody is saying, kind of like the Hot Girl Summers and the certain lines from Savage stuff. It just makes it a moment.
Right. How did you get involved with Pop Smoke? I can't believe I almost forgot to ask about that.
Nah, you're good. So shout out to Steven Victor. He hit me up one day when I was in Miami and was like, yo, I'm working with this kid. His name is Pop Smoke. I'm not familiar if you know who he is. And I was like, nah, I for sure know who he is. I said, to be honest, DJ Boop had hit up Nicki and was telling Nicki about Pop. And Nicki ended up jumping on the remix. And at first, I didn't really understand the record of Welcome to the Party. And then kept listening to it and understanding. I was like, okay, it's a whole different sound. So he was like, oh, so you're familiar with his sound? I was like, yeah. He was like, well, we're working right now. We're finishing up his album. You know, we just need some stuff, bro. Like, I know you can deliver. He says, I'm gonna send you some beats. And then, you know, he put some stuff on and send it back. So, he sent me some stuff and I was like, man, this one right here, which was the Christopher Walken. I said, man, this is like special. So I loaded it up, recorded it, sending it over to, Steven Victor. And then, you know, he went crazy for it. Pop FaceTiming, like, bro, this is crazy. I guess they were with Meek that day. They recorded it that same day, went back to New York, shot the video, and the song literally came out maybe 4 days later, 4 or 5 days later. So, after the song came out, Steven Victor was like, yo, can you come to New York and just work with Pop and finish the album? And I was like, yeah, bro, I really like his sound. He reminds me of 50 Cent. 50 Cent's my favorite artist. So I was like, yeah, for sure. So I flew out to New York and we were locked in for like four days working on Meet the Wu 2, which was his last project. And then, you know, when it came out, it was mixed emotions.
Yeah.
Some people were like, oh, it sounds the same. It sounds the same. And I'm like, nah, it's definitely elevated because he understands sonically sounding and working with new artists and putting songs together. Like, he has that star quality. And then, you know, due to his passing, it made people want to read back and listen to it again. Like, oh, wow, this was an amazing project. And then shout out to Steven Victor and 50 Cent and Ryan Press for putting together the album that came out and made people want to go back again, like, and see the growth and the development.
That is definitely a sad story, man, because obviously he was probably about to explode and get a whole lot bigger.
Man. Yeah.
It's sad.
It was a sad situation.
So what is next for you? I mean, as you say that you're an artist first and all that, obviously you've gotten some great gigs that have sidelined that. Are you working on a record or, you know, are you working on writing with other people for their records now? Like, what's next for you?
So I've really been focused on doing executive producing projects now. So in the midst of me finishing my project, which I'll just say after this, I've been working with a lot of newer artists and that are kind of, you know, have that, that kind of have that same effect, that same Pop Smoke effect where they just need that record, you know, to just keep elevating them. So I've just been working with a lot of new artists and executive producing projects. And also I'm starting to, you know, my own JV and, you know, going to labels with my own situation and I'm putting my own money up to put my stuff out. You know, and sign my own acts and bring people in like that. So that's really my next step, is really like boss moves and really moving like an exec, moving like the baby faces and the Jay-Z's and the music industry.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you mentioned 50 Cent is your favorite artist. I mean, he's also a guy who had his, at least at one point, he had a pretty big bench full of artists who were selling a lot of records underneath him as part of G-Unit.
Exactly. And that was a moment.
It was a moment.
That was a moment.
Yeah. So you said you were going to talk about your record next.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm putting together a project. I'm debating on a name if I want it to be Wow a Legend or 50 Shades of Grey. My real last name is Grey.
Right.
And the whole side of 50 Shades is that I can turn into 50 artists and be 50 artists, you know, when it comes down to being a songwriter.
Right.
So that's why I was getting the 50 Shades and then the Grey. And then the Wow a Legend is just something that I've just been branding just so people can just be like, wow, a legend when I make posts and stuff like that.
Right.
But my project is almost done. It sounds amazing. I got all the features that I want on the project. It's a big record that's about to come out on 2K, like really big. Shout out to my brother Damian Lillard for putting it together. And, you know, I'm really excited to get the reaction off of that. So, you know, kind of just piggybacking and really being able to balance both. I was able to, when I work with certain artists, I don't have to give them my sound. So I'm kind of blessed to be able to put out my own music and not be compared to the artists that I work with.
Right. So obviously anybody these days, you know, once a record is done, you can just drop it that night if you want to. And we've seen that done a lot of times in the past 5, 6, 7, 10 years. But
yeah.
For you, you know, you obviously want to raise your profile also to get to that star level. Does that change the way you want to release something, especially if it's now during a pandemic where you can't tour, you can't go places and promote the way you normally you could?
Exactly. Yeah, like putting together the right rollout.
Yeah.
And just making sure that everything is coming out the way that it's supposed to. Having the influences from like the TikToks and the Trillers and dealing with the streaming services and working with the Spotify's and working with the Apple Music people, is definitely a major role just because of the fact that we're in a pandemic. So everything is like MP3 and digital.
Yeah.
So whenever you put a song out, you know, people are really want to hear the record. I mean, it's kind of to that point now where if you want, you can put out 100 songs a month and something might go, You know what I'm saying? Because everybody's just listening to stuff. It's not really the visual side of how it used to be just due to this pandemic. A lot of artists really don't want to shoot videos because they got to do role like sets and get people to come to the roles and all that stuff. So it kind of like plays a part where it's kind of good. If you make good music, you're kind of like in a good space to really take advantage of it right now.
And you're right. I mean, people are listening to more music probably than ever online because you could just like scroll through, check things out or whatever. But to get you as a persona to that bigger level, that's when it's sort of hard to do it without being on TV shows or without playing shows and stuff like that. That's the part I think is tricky for somebody like you for where you are right now.
Yeah. Yes and no. It's kind of, it could be if you never was an artist before and you kind of just came in brand new, but I kind of had a fan base already before and my people were kind of like, where's the music? I see you working with everybody else. And then just off my, interaction on Instagram and my interaction on Twitter and just little stuff that I post that people kind of gravitate to and grab. A lot of people don't understand that you have to be some type of, you have to be an influencer.
Yeah.
You have to be one of those people that people see and be like, what are they doing every day? And I've been realizing that, like, before, like, I remember when quarantine first started, I was doing this stuff where I was just, like, imitating all the artists from 2000, like, all of them. And I was dressing up like them. I was just finding random stuff in the house, and I was doing the same exact stuff that they were doing in the music videos. And it was picking up. It was going, people were posting it. It just became a moment, and then I had a conversation with somebody and they were like, yo, if you're going to take the music serious, you don't want to come off as a comedian because people are going to start looking at it and be like, yo, this dude is so funny. Mm. And then you put music out and then it's like, oh, we kind of like your comedy better. So I kind of backed off of that. But I understand my influence. Right. And I understand, you know, certain stuff that people gravitate to. Like I did something on Instagram the other day where I was just like, girls need to, they've been complaining about they want men to do this and want men to do that and get them this. And I said, get it yourself. And I said, like, it's the little stuff that matters. Like, maybe you should pay for our haircuts and they could get you a car. And my haircuts are $100. And I had maybe like 13 girls or 14 girls send me $100 just for a haircut. You know what I'm saying? So I just look at that type of situation and that type of stuff where people are kind of like, interested in seeing it, and then I look at it when it gets to a bigger platform and working with the right PRs and working with the right digital marketing teams who are able to put yourself in people's face a certain different way and understand algorithm. And I really understand that part. And my whole thing was just getting that confidence and just understanding like certain things that I could do to get people to gravitate to who Derek Milano is.
Right. That's smart too, because I mean, you know, like, That's getting exactly to the people who are most likely to be most interested. But of course, since you understand algorithms, it's like you got to keep feeding it.
You got to. Like you can't really take a month break.
Yeah.
I mean you can, but you know, people would be wanting to see everything. I've been understanding now people want to see visuals before they see a picture with music playing in the back. And you know, just little stuff that doesn't come off corny.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people, they use that clout chaser word, and that's something that I'm not going to do. I'm not going to try to force people to go to me or try to buy into who I am doing some dumb stuff and exploiting myself and do stuff like that. Like, everything that I'm going to do or I've been doing has been something that I would actually do in real life, and people who know me, like, yeah, that's something that Derek would do.
Right. Cool, man. Well, I mean, it seems like you got a great plan, and you know, I look forward to hearing everything that you do next, whether it's for somebody else or your own record as well.
Thank you, Brian.
No problem, man. Take care. Good luck.
All right, thank you. Have a good one.
100 years of radio, 100 years of hit makers.
Thanks to Derek Milano for spending so much time with us. Thank you for listening. And next week, we're talking to EY, who co-wrote 24/7 for Meek Mill, and he's also co-written songs for Drake, Chris Brown, and Childish Gambino. We'll see you then.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.